This podcast is produced in part by Podfly.net. Podfly, passion for great-sounding podcasts.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of Overseas Radio Network or broadcast partners. All information provided is for educational purposes only. Before taking action, consult a licensed professional.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, and coming up on Columbia Calling with me, your host, Richard McCall, here in the high-altitude capital city of Columbia, Bogota, we talk later in the show with Claire Austin, a Briton who has had and is raising a young child in Bogota, Colombia. So this is an excellent show for those people thinking or considering on raising a child overseas in a culture different to that of the one they are familiar with. We talk about the health system, we talk about the schooling system, we talk about the cultural conflicts that you may encounter, and indeed that Claire Austin from Essex is possibly encountering at the moment. This is a must-listen show. And as always, we discuss Colombia and all the nuances taking place in this great country that we are happy to call home. So don't go away. Stay tuned on the Overseas Radio Network and listen to Colombia Calling with me, your host, Richard McCall.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, your online radio resource about life abroad.
The U.S. government has spoken. It wants higher tax rates, capital controls to keep your money under their control, surveillance to spy on your every email. In short, the government wants to control every aspect of your life and make you their slave. As an internationally minded person, you know keeping everything you own in one country could be disastrous. But how do you get started? Announcing Passport to Freedom. In just 3 days, you'll learn how to escape high taxes and reduce or eliminate your tax burden. How to form an offshore corporation or trust. The best places to get a second passport. The best places to expatriate, and more. This 3-day event will reveal everything you need to know about keeping yourself and your assets safe. Tickets to this event in fabulous Las Vegas are extremely limited, so go to PassportOverseas.com. That's PassportOverseas.com. Seats are extremely limited, so register today and take advantage of a special 50% discount for overseas radio listeners. Don't miss this chance to see offshore and expat experts like Joel Nagel, Bobby Casey, Jake DeSillis, Pete Sisko, Andrew Henderson, and more. Go to OverseasPassport.com now and reserve your ticket before the government shuts this opportunity down.
From China's Great Wall to the Leaning Tower of Pisa, this is the Overseas Radio Network.
Good afternoon, folks. It's me, Richard McCall, your host for Columbia Calling on the Overseas Radio Network. I'm radioing in from Bogota, the Colombian capital city, 2,600 meters, closer to the stars, as they like to say here. We are going to be talking about childbirth, the health system, and raising a child if you're an expat parent here in Colombia. Of course, this is relevant to anyone thinking of raising a child, an infant, away from their own culture, away from their comfort zone. So please, when we come back in segments 2, 3, and 4 of the show, we'll be talking to Claire Austin, a Briton, who basically fell in love with a Colombian. That's abbreviated. She fell in love with a Colombian and moved over to Colombia to be with him. They've since had a child. Nico is 1 year old, and we'll be talking to Claire about all of her sort of cultural conflicts, what she's enjoyed and what has been a shock and so on. We'll be talking all about these things and any sort of questions that you have. I'm sure we'll come back to Claire at a later date in this show to see how the process is proceeding and if everything's met her expectations. So this is a very good show today with some very key information for those of you expats out there considering raising a child, having a child in a hospital, exactly, overseas, far from home, far from your family, far from your friends. So yes, this is a very important show. aside from that, let's start talking a little bit more about Colombia before that. Well, I mean, Halloween. Colombia is nuts about Halloween. Even for the last 10 days, I think, I've seen people dressed up as ghouls and zombies and witches, and the kids are all dressed as princesses, and, you know, little girls as princesses, little boys as pirates, and so on and so forth. I've never been in a country that's more crazy about Halloween. I mean, how much fun is that, that the people really get behind it? In Mompós, where my little hotel is, La Casa Amarilla in Mompós, which is five, six hours south of Cartagena on the Caribbean coast, I haven't spent Halloween there for 2 years. And even the children in town are aware of this fact. They're like, you know, where's the gringo? Where's the Englishman? Because we want to ask the Englishman. We want to come trick-or-treating round at the Casa Amarilla because he provides good sweets. So apparently I purchase a high quality of a confectionery, which has endeared me to many of the town's children. When in fact, there always did seem to be quite a stream of children coming by asking for trick-or-treat. But of course, you know, it's all about ingratiating yourself to the town and you know, being a good host, being a good foreigner in a foreign land. And anyway, so that was Halloween, parties everywhere. Bogota, you know, zombies. There was a parade. I saw a parade of everyone on skateboards, zombies on skateboards passing down the Avenida Novena yesterday night. So pretty fun stuff. And of course, there's a few, I think that today there's a few sort of sore heads out there from the over excesses of celebrating Halloween. My wife and I, Alba, we went away for a few days last week, and this is always great to get out of the city. Anyone will know that when you live in a city and you work in a city and you're always stuck to your desk. But anyway, we managed to get away for the first time in 7 years. We visited a town in 7 years that I've lived here. First time in her life, 7 years that I've lived here. We managed to get down to the south to a city called Popayán. Popayán is the capital of the Cauca region. That's one of the southern departments of states here. And it's a colonial city, beautiful colonial city, whitewashed walls, opulent colonial buildings, fantastic food. I believe it's been named sort of like Intangible World Heritage for UNESCO for its food. But a really nice place to visit. And of course, tourism has been affected this year with the sort of nationwide strikes and farmers' strikes and so on, which have blocked the road between the major city nearby, which is Cali, and Popayán. It's only a two-hour drive between Cali and Popayán, so if you're flying down from the north of the country, you can fly into Cali, which is exactly what we did, so like a 40-minute flight at best, or a 45-minute flight. And then we flew out, then we drove down from there in public transport. It was a wonderful trip, and we got to hang out with a former interviewee of this show on Columbia Calling. Is that Tony Clark, a Scot who runs the Hostel Trail and the Caracol Hostel, both of them in Popayán. I mean, this man has been behind, him and his partner Kim, have been behind the drive for international tourism to Popayán. So you can look up that show, which was a few months back. But I strongly recommend, if you're considering traveling in the south, is a good route you can do, is you can leave Bogotá by the south, head down towards Neiva, but go to the Tatacoa Desert, which is near to Neiva, beautiful sort of lunar landscape, great for stargazing and bird watching. From there, you can then head on down for a few more hours to San Agustin, where they have these anthropomorphic statues, pre-Columbian statues. From there, you can go over Tierra Adentro, where there are burial chambers underground, and it's a wonderful part of the country. And then over the mountains to Popayán. So that makes a good loop into then sort of Cali, or if you want to go further south into Putumayo, but then from Cali up to Medellin. But many options, you know, and I strongly recommend going to Popayán. And we were able to see some similarities between Popayán and Mompós. Of course, the two are linked for having very famous Semana Santa celebrations. But that's as far as the similarities go, because Popayán is the capital of a state and therefore has a lot more infrastructure and business, and of course it's a student town, so that leaves it with quite a cool vibe to it. You know, a lot of young people, and some of the best universities in Colombia. So, a very interesting place to visit, and I highly recommend it. What else? Well, the big news, and actually probably something that we'll touch on next week, because I'm planning on talking to some graffiti artists next week here in Bogota. So we have some English-speaking graffiti artists and some foreign graffiti artists who make their home in Bogota. But the big deal last week was that Justin Bieber, yeah, that one, you know, the Canadian teeny bop idol, I don't know, if he hadn't have been in Bogota, I wouldn't know how to pronounce his name. But anyway, he was in Bogota and he gave a concert to however many thousands of screaming young girls. And anyway, after his concert, he decided he wanted to go out because he's seen the graffiti and he knows that Bogota is known for its graffiti. And he went out to the Calle 26, that's the Calle 26, it's the one that leads from the center of town down and out to the airport, and it's a major graffiti center, and actually the graffiti is incredibly artistic and socially important. Anyway, he was escorted by the police and his bodyguards, and he graffitied a wall. I believe the rules are in Colombia that you are allowed to graffiti on private property so long as you know you get permission. So it's just like painting, really. But you do it on public property, of course, it's a crime. And it seems that the stretch of wall upon which he graffiti was public property. So you've got the secretary of government for Bogota saying that he should probably return. I think it's a joke, it's tongue-in-cheek. Justin Bieber should return to do some community service for his crime. Anyway, the big scandal around it is that the police escorted him and, of course, were guarding him and making sure for his well-being, because parts of the Calle 26, the 26th Street, are not particularly safe, but the police were guarding him. But of course, the family there, you know, a few months ago, or is it even maybe a year ago now, a young graffiti artist from a different section of Bogota was graffitiing, and the police shot him in the back and killed him. And so, of course, there's this uproar saying, you know, well, you can come to Colombia as a foreigner and graffiti, and you'll be fine. But if you're a young Colombian graffitiing, you know, doing some artwork, you'll be shot. So, you know, it's a big sort of duplicity of situations. Anyway, so next week this will be something that we talk about more when we're talking to the graffiti artists. But those are the scandals taking place at the moment in Colombia. So always a great deal of debate around these things. The mayor, Gustavo Petro, who I interviewed a few months ago, he said, well, you know, had something happened to Justin Bieber, had the police not be there, we would be in a press conference, you know, reprimanding the mayor for the lack of security. And he's completely right in saying that. Love him or hate him, he has a point. So anyway, so we'll be coming back very shortly, and we'll be talking to Claire Austin, a Briton, raising her child with her partner, a Colombian, raising her child a long way from home here in Bogota, Colombia. So we're going to try and ask all the questions that you expats out there might want to ask when you're thinking of raising children overseas. This is Colombia Calling. I'm your host, Richard McCall. Don't go away.
OverseasRadio.com, broadcasting from Panama to Paris and beyond.
Tired of paying for traditional advertising? Sick of pouring money into SEO and questionable marketing firms? Looking to reach a new audience? We know you want to grow your business and directly engage your customers and clientele. Podcasting is the way to go, and Podfly has your solution. Whether you're a blogger, writer, business owner, entrepreneur, or service provider, Podfly makes it easy for anyone to have a professionally produced and distributed podcast. No radio experience or technical ability? No problem. In 3 easy steps, you'll be on your way to having a professional-sounding podcast and an exciting new platform to promote your business. Podfly's top-class support team guides you through the process to make podcasting easy, fun, and most important, have you sound your best. Get started today at podfly.net, and let's get your message truly heard. Podfly.net, passion for great-sounding podcasts.
Have you always dreamed of living abroad, but you are afraid it might be difficult? JustLanded.com helps you make the move. The free information on JustLanded.com helps you get a job, find a house, and a good school for your children. You can also meet other expats in our online community. Visit www.JustLanded.com and find out how easy it is to live your dream abroad. That's JustLanded.com.
You've got questions about Colombia, and Escape Artist has answers. Is Columbia a good fit for me and my plans? How do I buy a house? Find a job? Find a doctor? Start a business? Invest in real estate? What should I know to better appreciate its history, its culture, its opportunities? What is it really like to be an expat in Colombia? You'll find your answers at columbia.escapeartist.com, your complete and trusted guide for living, working, playing, investing, and retiring in Colombia. That's columbia.escapeartist.com.
You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network, the exclusive online radio station for the expatriate community.
Va subiendo la corriente con chinchorro y atarraya.
This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, your host, and this week we are talking about raising children in Colombia. So raising, you know, children in a foreign land to the one in which you yourself were born in. You know, I'm an expat. I'm English. I, you know, at some point hope to have children here in Colombia. But, of course, there are many questions that I have, or any one of you might have out there. But we have Claire Austin. Claire Austin is a resident of Essex in England, but she's now living in Colombia, in Bogota, in this stifling, busy capital city. But it's got all of the cultural benefits that we like. But she's had a young child here. And she's going to tell us a little bit about the process. She's going to tell us about her life here and how having a child may have been different to what she expected or what she would have expected in the UK. I'm sure it's detailed again for the same for the US or Canada. But anyway, Claire, thank you very much for coming on the show.
You're welcome. Hello.
All right, Claire. Listen, first of all, Claire, you've been in here. I mean, you decided to move to Colombia to be with your husband-to-be, or Juan, in December 2011, and you've been writing about this on a blog. So when did you actually come to Colombia?
Okay, so actually I met my soon-to-be husband in London. He was living in London at the time, and he moved back here to Bogota in early 2011. And at that point we were just friends, we were talking, and we stayed in touch. And over the year, we ended up talking every day on Skype, fell in love, and then were, you know, completely distraught that we were going to spend the rest of our lives apart, wondered how that we could ever get back together. And so I made the very scary decision to plunge into move abroad. Initially was going to be just for 3 months, just to see how things went. But actually, by the time I came here in December of 2011, we'd already fallen completely in love, planned our wedding, planned our children's names and everything. So actually when I came here, I had no intention of really ever returning to the UK. So, and luckily it's all worked out.
I mean, this is a fantastic story. I mean, your love sort of blossomed and you made the decision. And it's not, I mean, this is a big sacrifice on your part. I mean, you resigned from your job and you decided to come over to England. What were you doing before you left England?
Actually, I was working as a care coordinator, so I was an office manager of a company who provides learning support for adults with learning difficulties. So working with people who have autism, you know, special needs, Down syndrome, and physical disabilities as well. I had to pack that in, I sold my car, I said goodbye to all my family, which is the hardest thing.
Yes.
Came here all by myself.
So you came over all by yourself, not knowing Colombia really, but knowing just your husband to be,
yeah,
and now you are a mother here in Colombia.
Yeah, big change.
I mean, it's a big step, but we have to congratulate you and applaud you on this bravery, all in the name of true love.
Thank you.
I feel like I'm sort of announcing for the Princess Bride, you know, the movie. But anyway, Claire, so you mean you're in your healthcare and you left everything and you came over to Colombia and you've been here since was it December 2011? I forget.
Yeah.
You came in and so that's pretty much 2 years. And what sort of cultural, cultural conflicts have you encountered since you've been here?
I mean, the first one that I noticed was the language, because I came here thinking I knew Spanish. Well, at least I knew some Spanish. Having studied in school, and then obviously once I'd met Juan, I began to relearn, like at home and with private classes. And so I came here with, you know, thinking I would be fine. And actually the biggest thing was that when I came here, they don't speak like Spanish that I learned. They don't speak like mainland Spanish. They speak Colombian Spanish. And so for me, that was the hardest thing because I wasn't able to communicate with the family very well. They have all these expressions and these words and everything different to the Spanish I knew. So I felt very isolated. And when I was able to understand the family and get used to the way that they were talking to me, it was then again different when I went into the streets or I had to venture out on my own for work. And again, when I hear different dialects or, you know, I mean, you live here, you know that people here, they have so many different ways of talking and explaining things. That for me was the hardest thing because I really struggled to keep up with the conversation.
But now I imagine it's up to a very good standard 2 years later.
Yeah, well, you would think so. Yeah, no, the thing is I now, I understand nearly everything here
okay.
now. The struggle that I have is that I get very, very nervous and I feel like, well, I've made a few language errors, let's put it that way, over the 2 years. And so I tend to reserve myself and although I understand what people are saying to me, I prefer to hold back and not necessarily participate with conversations or join in. So.
Oh, come on. You made the big step to come over to Colombia. You can at least, you can, you're brave enough to speak Spanish.
I've honestly had the worst mistakes. I mean, actually, when I first came here, I fell in love with what they have here called a churro. It's like a donut. And I didn't know at that time that it was called a churro. And so I practiced and practiced and practiced pronouncing the word and learning what it was. And anyway, my husband went to work one day and his mom came into my bedroom and she said, Claire, have you had breakfast? And I told her what I thought was, yes, I've had a churro. And actually what I had said to her was, yes, I've had vagina.
Yes, this is going to generate a little bit, some sort of odd looks from your mother-in-law.
Exactly. She collapsed on the floor laughing and she knew that I'd made a mistake and I think she understood what I was supposed to have said, but it went around the family and I didn't live it down for about 3 months.
Well, I'm not sure you should be sharing this with all the listeners because we're going to remember you as the lady who dined out in the morning. But it's very good that you, at the very least, that your mother-in-law has a sense of humor because, I mean, if she were, you know, stuck up for Bogotano, you know, however, it would be very different, I think.
Well, and if it hadn't have been her, it could have been somebody else that I hadn't even known that well, or it could have been anyone. It could have been horrendous.
This is so funny. Now, tell me that moment, Claire, and then in the 2 years you've been here, you've worked?
Well, the thing is, when I came here, I was here for 3 months only before I got pregnant.
Right.
And so obviously for those 3 months, it was kind of like party time, and I was just enjoying myself, like living the life abroad, you know?
Yeah.
Then when I found out I was pregnant, I was mollycoddled by everybody here.
Yeah.
So I wasn't allowed out the house on my own. I wasn't allowed to do anything on my own. Everyone was so concerned about me and, you know, being foreign, being vulnerable for that reason and then also being vulnerable for the fact that I was pregnant as well. So during the pregnancy, no, I didn't work there. I mean, actually, I stayed in touch with my job from the UK. And
yep.
So I was still working online for them. So I did still have an income, which was good.
Which is very important. But it's very interesting that you brought this up. And so they completely mollycoddled you and you weren't allowed out. I mean, obviously, they took more care of you for being a foreigner than they would have done if you were a Colombian.
Definitely. And I think as well is that, you know, when most people come from abroad to live in Bogota, they live in the main sort of touristy areas, right? So they live in the north, they live in busy, vibrant places where there's lots of other people just like them. But because I came here and stayed with the family, so I'm living kind of outside of the main area, and so the neighbourhood that I live in, it's not the safest. I mean, it's safe, but it's not as safe as it could be. And actually what they told me when I was pregnant, because I was very naive and I thought that because I was pregnant, people would be nicer to me. Like they would be in the UK, you know, you get people help you out, people look after you, even if you don't know them. And actually it's quite the opposite here. What they told me was that because I was pregnant, I was more likely to be a victim of crime or a victim of like being robbed on the street because I'm someone who can't fight back. I can't run back after them. I can't do anything. So for that reason, they didn't let me out on my own. In fact, I actually had children with me sometimes. I was allowed out the house, but only if one of the children went with me, who could be 8 or 9 years old.
This is going to be a great, your bodyguard.
Yeah, exactly. But for them, it was still like that 8-year-old was still more streetwise than I was. So
I'd never thought of that. I live in Chapinero near to some mutual friends of ours, yeah. And what have you and stuff. I would never have thought of that. But of course, this is a Colombian way of thinking of things. And of course, exactly. You're in the family's barrio, which is not in a tourist area. Exactly. How have you found living there? I assume you're still living with the family.
Yeah, we still live here with the family. They actually own a house here, so we have our own space within the family home. Mm-hmm. It's nice. People here are so friendly. Everybody knows me now as the foreigner. So I go to the greengrocers and everyone knows me. They say hello, same with the shop, same with the hairdressers. And I'm spotted a mile off, you know. Okay. I walk down the street and you can see people looking at me as if to say, she's not from here.
And are you the gringa or la inglesa, or are you just really tall?
I'm not really cool. I'm just a gringa, although I'm, you know, obviously not gringa, but that's what I consider. In fact, actually, the other day I was wearing, like a bracelet on my wrist, and it was one that I had the Rastafellas. And I went to the shop. It was actually the shop where we ordered our wedding rings from. And we went back yesterday to collect them, and the lady said, I'm really sorry. She said, but can I ask where you're from? So I told her I'm from England. And she said, oh, okay, I thought you were from Jamaica.
Very good, because of the Rasta colours, of course.
You had the Rasta colours. The son had a Rasta bracelet too, and I was like, no, I just love Jamaica.
It's all very interesting. This is Columbia Calling, if you've just tuned in. And we're talking to Claire Austin, who's an English lady now living in Bogota. And also, she's going to be explaining to us her experiences as a foreigner living in the city, coming over here alone and having a child and raising a child in Bogota, far from home. So don't go away. For any of you out there thinking of having children overseas, this is a very down to earth and sometimes comical, sometimes horrific story, I think. But don't go away. This is Columbia Calling, and we'll be right back.
Pack your bags and explore the world with us. You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network.
This is Jason Hartman, and I want to welcome you to the Jet Setter Show blogcast, an audio version of our written blog at jetsettershow.com. You can find the full-length podcast at jetsettershow.com or on iTunes, where we interview thought leaders and experts on exploring lifestyle-friendly destinations worldwide. Here is today's blogcast.
Thank you, Jason. The next time you really want to get away from it all, Jet Setter would like to suggest you travel to the most remote island on Earth, Bouvet Island. By remote, we mean remote. This uninhabited volcanic island is currently owned by Norway, through no fault of their own. At present, the only sign of development on Bouvet Island is an automated meteorological station. There are no roads, houses, grocery stores, or spas. Despite the fact that a travel aggregate website like Travelocity might erroneously return flight information for travelers, let us assure you, there are no airlines or cruise lines that pass anywhere near the place. Bouvet Island is 19 square miles in size and 93% covered by a glacier. Located in the South Atlantic Ocean, Bouvet is more than 1,000 miles from Antarctica and 1,600 miles from Cape Town, South Africa. The coast is harsh and foreboding, with steep glacier cliffs falling to black volcanic sand beaches. With no ports or anchorages of any sort, your best means of travel is to land by helicopter. Once there, feel free to study the feeble vegetation consisting of moss and lichens. Other than that, seals, seabirds, and penguins will be your only companions for the duration of your stay. The tricky part about travel to Bouvet Island is that, since it's a nature preserve, you'll likely be denied permission if you request a visit for tourist purposes only, though no one from Norway will likely be there to refuse entry. If you happen to be an Arctic research biologist, geologist, or helicopter pilot, your chances of legal entry are better. So if you really need time alone, stock up the yacht with extra batteries and whale blubber, tie the chopper down good to the landing deck, and strike out for Bouvet Island. Don't forget to send a postcard. For more, visit jetsettershow.com. For the Jet Setter Blogcast, I'm Will Weeks.
Thanks for listening to this audio blog, and please see disclaimers and important information at the website.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, the station to help you reach your dream destination.
Va subiendo la corriente, cochincho.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm your host, Richard McCall, and we're here in Bogota, 2,600 meters closer to the stars, as they say. We're talking to Claire Austin. Claire is an English lady from Essex originally, now living in Bogota. She's living with the family, the Colombian family. She's about to get married, but she's had a child, and she's had a Colombian child, an Anglo-Colombian child here in Colombia, and this is why we're talking to her, so she can share her experiences of the health services in Colombia, childbirth, and obviously, you know, concerns about schooling and so on and so forth. So, Claire, you know, we're just going to jump right in.
Okay.
Were you worried at the beginning about Colombian health services?
Horrified.
Absolutely
terrified, horrified. I did not want to go, didn't want to do anything. Absolutely scary. Yeah, really scary.
You were really scared.
What
did you think? It was just going to be sort of some sort of jungle attendant?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be very low budget, very backstreet, very witch doctory. having worked and kind of grown up in and around healthcare myself in the UK, I was, you know, very accustomed to the way that we do things back home. And so there was a lot of changes that maybe had I have not been in that area of work, I wouldn't have had the expectations.
Sure.
But having seen and helped and, you know, worked within and around hospitals, so I had an idea of what things should be like. And of course, they weren't.
Yeah.
They weren't anything like that when I came here. So, I mean, for example, when I first found out I was pregnant, we did a few home tests, like home pregnancy tests, and
yeah,
I wasn't convinced. so my husband said, okay, so let's go to the clinic, we'll get them to do a blood test. So, okay, fine. And I don't know, maybe I'm a bit naive, but my idea of a clinic is a nice white building with clean, you know, clean walls, clean floors, everything, like, sterilized. And we went into the local town, Fontibon, and he said, okay, we're here. And I'm looking around and I thought, I don't see anything that looks like a clinic. And actually what it was just the entrance to someone's house.
No.
They had a few certificates up on the wall in wooden frames that said that they were certified to do injections and take blood tests. So whilst I'm having my blood test to find out my future, I can see through the house and see the man having dinner, watching his novella, like his soap. and I was just absolutely terrified. And the whole time I was thinking, right, that's it. I'm going to get hepatitis. You know, I'm going to come to some horrible death now. Like, but that's the way they do things here. And having now, you know, I'd only been here 3 months when that happened. And having now had the 2 years here and seeing how they work and having all the experiences I've had, that to me now, it's normal now. You know,
yeah,
it was shocking at first, but now I know, I tell people now and I think, wow, yeah, you must think I live in kind of squalor. But actually, that's just how things are here and there's nothing wrong with it.
Exactly, exactly. You're right. And of course, you didn't get hepatitis.
No, of course not.
Let's just clarify straight up.
No,
despite being able to watch a telenovela through a window where a man was eating his lunch.
No, exactly.
From the clinic.
So that was the magical day that I actually found out I was pregnant while watching some man eat his, I don't know, steak and potatoes.
You've got a very, very observant eye there. So, but of course, you're taking in everything because this is your future, you're thinking. And then, of course, you find out you're pregnant and you're jubilant. But then I guess, you know, you're a long way from home.
Mm, yeah.
And, you know, this must affect you a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I suffered. Well, actually, it's hard to know whether I suffered kind of hormonal changes that put me into kind of depressive moods at times, or whether it was simply because I was lonely and I was missing my family.
Yeah.
But it was a relatively easy pregnancy. I had no complications. You know, I was looked after extremely well. But there was, psychologically, I couldn't help thinking that this, you know, I wasn't happy. Let's put it that way. I was terrified about the birth. I was terrified about not having my family there to see the baby and congratulate me, and, you know, and just as somebody to have somebody talk my own language to me during the time that was so stressful in my life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, I got through it. I did it somehow.
You've done it. And of course, you know, Nico is a year old. You've just had his birthday and his baptism. But before we get onto that, I was reading your blog from back in November, you know, in November 2012, from when Nico was born, and you wrote a very, you know, insightful, personal, but very amusing blog about the childbirth. The title of Claire's blog is An Idiot Abroad. It's the craziness of life in Colombia. And you can Google this and find out, or find it from my website. That's richardmccall.com, because it will be linked on there. But, you wrote about it, and you mentioned the traffic and stuff, but you talk about being in a room with, I think it's four other women in labor as well.
Yeah.
And so they're all in different stages of being in labor. So all in different stages of screaming, I guess, to different stages of pain.
Yeah. Definitely.
This must have been a little bit of a shock.
It was kind of terrifying, actually, because obviously everyone deals with pregnancy and deals with the pain differently.
Yeah.
But when it's your first child and you have no idea, I think it would be better to have been in a room on my own, where I could have just dealt with my pain and how I was feeling without wondering, oh God, is that going to happen to me next? You know,
yeah.
Having to see these women, they were crying, they were screaming, they were bleeding. It was awful. It was so traumatic for me.
Yeah, of course. You're watching and you're saying, yeah, that's me. That's going to be me in I don't know, a couple of hours.
And I'm thinking, I'm not prepared to be in that much pain right now. You know, I don't feel like that. And as I said, I had a relatively good pregnancy. So actually, even during the labor, I wasn't in pain. I didn't have like horrific contractions, and it wasn't anything to worry about. And I mean, obviously everybody's experiences is different.
Yeah.
And even the nurse, she said to me, you know, don't listen to those women. She said, they're just overreacting. And I thought, maybe they are, but I don't know. It was still scary at the time.
But I like the mention you have. You're in there with the doctor, and he's trying to slide a few words of English in to reassure you.
Yeah, he did. He tried to. And actually, that was worse, because when you're in pain and when you don't want to have to humour other people, you just want to be left alone, you know?
Yeah.
And his English was terrible, and he just kept saying the most random words, like, oh, mouse and cheese and things like this. And I felt like I had to be, like, humouring him and laugh at him and make him feel like he was doing a good job, even though I just wanted to like scream and cry at him, you know.
And yet he's got you thinking about household appliances and food.
Yeah.
Very good.
Strange experience. I mean, but probably strange for them as well, because they're trying to do a job and they didn't want to have to put me at ease and obviously have the language barrier. And I think probably for them it was just as scary, you know.
Yeah, of course. Because, of course, they can't communicate directly with you, really. I mean, you know, your language at this point mm-hmm. was perhaps not as good as it is today.
No, it wasn't. And actually, I think during that time, it was the best it's ever been. And I think that's probably just because my brain told me I had to be the best. You know,
yeah.
I had to know exactly what I was saying and what I was feeling.
Yeah.
The horrible thing was that during the whole of the pregnancy, every single doctor's appointment that I went to, and there was a lot of them, they were telling me, yeah, no, Juan's going to be with you. Don't worry. Don't panic. He has to be there because we need him to translate. If there's a problem or if you don't feel this, you know, how you're supposed to feel, you have to be able to tell him so that he can relay that information to us.
Right.
So that was what kept me going the whole pregnancy, was that he would be there, because traditionally here, the girls do it on their own. They don't have, it's not like in the States or back home in the UK. They don't have a whole room full of relatives that are there with them. It's you're on your own and that's it.
Yeah.
But I knew that I'd have one, so that was fine. They just separated us, and that was, I was left on my own and had to do it. So it was scary.
Well, it's fantastic. I mean, you know, and Nico's a healthy, vibrant, Anglo-Colombian, but little boy, loving everything.
He's perfect. Yeah, he's an absolute angel.
Well, that's so many congratulations to you on that. I mean, it's not a small feat what you've done. Not only childbirth, obviously, which is incredible, but to do it in a country far away. I mean, we're not even talking sort of European distances or North American. This is a long way away from home.
Yeah, definitely. It was, and actually, if you knew me, like if my family and friends, they're the most surprised, because I am the biggest wimp going. Like, I would never do anything on my own. I hate doing, you know, I hate putting myself out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
And so I think for them, that was like horrible as well, because they were back home in the UK wondering how the hell am I going to deal with this?
Yeah.
But yeah, I did it.
And have your family been out to visit and to meet their grandchild?
Well, no, my mum has been the only one. She's come twice. She came when Nico was 6 weeks old, and then she came again when he was about 2 months.
Okay.
So, no, nobody else. I mean, it's a long journey, and obviously some of my relatives are old, or, you know, they have medical problems, they can't fly, so.
Sure.
That's the reason for us. We're heading back to the UK for 2 months this Christmas.
So you'll have Christmas with the family, with the grandchild.
Yeah, and with the wedding too. So we decided to have the wedding in England as well.
Very nice.
Yeah, can't wait.
And will Colombians come over?
No.
No, not this time.
Strictly a UK wedding.
Okay, UK wedding out in Essex, probably in the church where you were baptised.
Yeah.
So that's very nice. That's very nice to hear. And so 2 months, and you'll get out there, and wow. I mean, I imagine people are getting pretty excited about your return to England.
Yeah, my family are in bits, and my mum, every time I speak to her, she's in tears. And I think like they bought enough clothes and toys and nappies to last like a year there. So
that's fantastic.
I think we're going to be spoiled rotten.
So I can hear it in your voice. You're very excited.
I am. I mean, the thing is that not only have they not met my son, but it's only my mum, my dad, and my sister who have met my husband as well.
Yeah.
So none of the others have met him either. So it's going to be one huge reunion.
It's a huge reunion. That's awesome. And have you've got a date set for the wedding then?
Yeah, we have the 18th of January.
The 18th of January. So you have the madness that is Christmas, the madness that is New Year, and then you give yourself sort of 17, 18 days, and then you've got the madness of the wedding.
Yeah. it's been the most easily planned wedding. It's just so cheap and so simply, you know, organized that we're not worrying, we're not stressing about it. I mean, for us, and I think that's part of living here, you know, don't get caught up with how much money you've spent, how many people you're inviting. It's just the fact is we want to get married. It's a ceremony. If people come, great. If they don't, it's not going to bother us either. So we've left it so low key that we're not getting stressed over it. So it's not a problem.
It's nice to hear that. My wedding was incredibly stressful. It was here in Colombia, but it was stressful equally. So, but my issues were, I think, different to yours, because it was here in Colombia. So I knew that some would come over in England and the States and whatever. So I got, you know, 10, 15 friends, but it was how to limit the amount of Colombian family that would come.
Yeah,
because,
of course.
I'm going to move on to that a little bit because it's interesting, because you're living at home and you had the baptism last week, you know, Nico's baptism, and as you, we're sort of suggesting 100 relatives that you'd never met turned up.
Yeah, well, not quite 100, but still a lot. Yeah. The families here are enormous, as you know.
Yeah.
I've met. Even the thing is that even sometimes when I've met them and I meet them again, I don't remember them from the first time. They all have, I've got like 100 Jose's and 100 Juan Carlos's. You know, it's so hard to keep track of who's who and who's related to who. But yeah, I mean, it was actually a really good day. Everyone was happy. It turned out really well.
Oh, this is fantastic to hear. I mean, it sounds like you've really assimilated and acclimatized into life in Colombia. But we'll come back to this point in the final segment when we talk a little bit more about Claire's life in Colombia. So for those people still who've just tuned in, we're talking about raising a child and living long way from home. In this instance, it's Claire from Essex in England, now living in Bogota. And she's a new mother to a one-year-old child. So this is Colombia Calling. I'm your host, Richard McCall, and we'll be right back.
Your expatriation destination. This is OverseasRadio.com.
Worried about rising taxes, costly insurance, out-of-control health care, economic decline, staggering debt, mortgages, and retirement? It doesn't have to be this way. Escape to Ecuador, one of the most beautiful countries on the planet, and at EcuadorAtYourService.com, be your guide. Ecuador has been named the number one retirement destination in the world 3 times in a row. So if you're searching for beaches, jungles, farmland, cities, affordable healthcare, and a richer lifestyle at half the cost, contact EcuadorAtYourService.com.
Searching for freedom? The sustainable community in Chile is found at FreedomOrchard.com. Quiet, peaceful, and pristine are some of Freedom Orchard's outstanding features. Freedom Orchard offers recreational activities, organic farming, and self-sufficiency for water and electricity. Well-known Chile expert, free market economist, and radio host of Red Hot Chile, Dr. John Coben, is heading a team of developers, organic farmers, and seasoned professionals to make Freedom Orchard a reality. FreedomOrchard.com, for when you're serious about your freedom.
Sit back and relax. You are tuned into the Overseas Radio Network.
Va subiendo la corriente.
And we're back. I'm Richard McCall, your host. This is Columbia Calling, and we're talking to Claire Austin, an English lady who's now a mother and here in Bogota. She up sticks, came over. She followed her heart and for true love. She came, and she's with Juan, and she's living with her, the whole Colombian family in Bogota, Colombia. And we've been talking about sort of the trials of the health system here, which of course, I mean, Claire has relayed to us, has been excellent, and she has a healthy one-year-old son, Nico. Anyway, Claire, it's been really, you know, almost inspiring listening to you. I mean, you'd never been over to this side of the world before, and now you're living here and you've had a child here. You're going back right now for Christmas and New Year to spend a couple of months with your family so they can get to know and bond with their new relative. And of course your husband, who many of them don't know.
Yeah.
But I want to go move back a little bit to sort of, you know, you've had a son here and your immediate future is to live in Colombia.
Yes, now it is. Yeah. We had planned to go back to the UK.
Yeah.
At least for 5 or something years. Enough that Juan could live there and be a resident there and get a passport for the UK.
Yeah.
But no, they've changed all of the immigration rules now, which means that it's nearly impossible for us to ever go back there for longer than 6 months.
Yes, this is true.
So yeah, we're stuck here.
You're stuck here because of the strict and draconian laws in the UK. But, so, I mean, I want to talk a little bit about raising Nico here. I mean, obviously now, you know, all your priorities have changed in life, having a child. And you know, I assume you're looking into education and so on.
Yeah, it terrifies me. It really does. I don't like thinking about it.
I'm sorry to bring it up, but people want to hear, you know.
I know. I mean, the thing is here, the schools here are actually really good.
Yeah.
Juan wants Nico to go to an English university because university standards are much better in the UK.
Yes.
Here, the school, like the primary schools, they learn so much. The children are given so much work, so much to learn. I mean, they actually study accounting at the age of 10 here. They do sex education really early. Everything's put to them, you know, as soon as it can be. So they're brought up with a knowledge of almost everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not worried about the level of education that he's going to get. I'm more worried about like the social aspect. You know, the struggles with the kids who aren't brought up properly and who he's going to make friends with, who he's going to end up, you know, socializing with. Because, I mean, drugs here is not a huge problem, as, you know, not as huge as it has been here in the past.
Yeah.
But there's still a lot of it and it's still so easy to access. And I still see here in the barrio where I live, you know, kids as young as 8 or 9 walking around sniffing glue, and it's so heartbreaking to see that. And so I'm absolutely terrified about how he's going to be when he goes to school and who he makes friends with, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting situation because I think when you're weighing these things up, these are issues that you two are going to have anyway. Were you in, let's say, you know, in Clacton or in London or elsewhere? I mean, these are very real concerns for a new mother.
Exactly. I mean, the thing is that I think you have to just take things in your stride as they come along. Oh, talking of him, he's just woken up.
The big guy's woken up. We had about 35 minutes without it.
Of peace. I mean, I think you just have to take things in your stride. I mean, you worry about everything until it happens, and then you realize, well, actually, I don't know why I worry so much.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be something you have to deal with as and when it comes along, I guess.
Okay. It's going to be tough, and you're going to be thinking about these things, and you've got education, you've got this, but I assume, I mean, you'll educate him locally.
Yeah, we will. We'll send him to the local school. Actually, probably the same one that the other children here will go to. You know, there's at least 8 to 9 children within the family that are still in primary school, so he'll go along with the others, and you know, they look out for one another. It's kind of like families stick together here. So.
This is true. I mean, while you'll stand out as the gringa, although you're English, and everybody knows you, as we mentioned in the barrio, everybody knows who you are. I mean, you know, Nico will be surrounded by loving and defensive family members, of which there are many, many, many in the barrio. They'll be fine. He'll grow up Colombian.
We had two options anyway in you know, the failsafe. We're going to, as soon as he's able to, we're going to put him into mixed martial arts classes.
You've already thought about mixed martial arts.
Exactly, we've already thought about it. And the other thing is that, well, actually what my husband said was, I don't know why you're worrying so much. He's not going to be bullied. The kids are going to love him because he'll be able to do all of their English homework for him. For
this
them.
Is
so,
true. But imagine so you'll be raising him in English.
Yeah, of course. We talk to him in English. You know, being that the rest of the world here talks to him in Spanish, so my husband and I and the television, it's always in English, so he will still have that. He'll be fluent in both languages.
Oh, very interesting. Very interesting. It's true. It's actually a very good point. He will be doing all of the homework and, in, and of course, increasing Fontibon's understanding of English, which I don't imagine is too strong.
Yeah, no, it's not that great.
All right. Well, we touched on a subject a little bit ago when you were saying, well, you know, it's going to be impossible to return to the UK. And but how have you found, you know, all of the sort of bureaucracy relating to childbirth here and all the paperwork that you've needed to do?
Actually, it's been top notch, really.
Yeah.
I can't complain at all. And we were actually having a conversation about it at the baptism because my friend was saying that, you know, how some people can be mothers and why there isn't some kind of a test that people have to take before they can become a mother because of all these children on the streets and, you know, these kids that are just brought up so poorly. And actually here, they do have that. When I was pregnant, I had to go for, I think it was 6 or 8 weeks to a course, twice a week, where they teach you as a mother to be about all of the things you're going to come across, all of the complications you could have, what you have to do once the child's born. They teach you exercises to get back into shape. I mean, absolutely everything from A to Z, you know?
Yeah.
And then once you have the baby, you know, I was in the hospital, and the next day, before they let me go home, I had to actually take a test that was questions about basic parenthood, how should a temperature be, like ideal temperature for the baby should be, and how do you test bath water, and what would you do if your baby had a rash? You know, all these kind of simple questions that every parent comes across. And yeah, they make you take the test and they make you hand it in and they actually give you like an okay, you're ready to go home.
And what if you fail the test?
I don't know. Luckily I passed. I don't know, but I mean, the support here is really good. So what I would imagine is that if you hadn't have gotten the questions right, they would have sent somebody to your room to talk with you about the things that you got wrong, because they're so keen to educate here, like with regards to health and with regards to looking after yourself as well as your baby. There's so many like foundations here for women and for like knowing how to respect your body and kind of just looking after yourself, knowing what's right and wrong. So, and they did. When I was in the hospital, they sent a nurse around nearly every hour just to see how it was. Did I need anything? Did I want to talk to somebody? It was really nice. Very well looked after.
Well, it sounds like, I mean, everything's gone according to plan. And of course, I mean, while you do this course and you have this, you're completely looked after by the family. I mean, we've not said it, but I know that your mother-in-law is there taking care of Nico as we speak. I mean, the support, you know, sort of mechanism in Colombian families makes life that much easier, no?
Yeah, it does. And not just with regards to children, but with regards to anything. I mean, family here is number one. We've lost sight of that in the UK now. I mean, families in the UK, they separate, they eat separately, they shop separately, they do everything almost separately. I'm speaking from sort of personal experience. I mean, when I was living at home, I very rarely saw my mum. I would never let her know where I was going, when I was going to be back here, or anything like that. And here, it's almost the complete opposite. I mean, with regards to this family that I'm now living with, they phone each other at least 5 times a day. They speak to every single one of the family members to check, you know, how are you? Where are you? What are you doing? Do you have any problems? Can we help you? You know, it's just constant, absolute constant support here.
Yeah, but this is not, you don't find this because of the real difference. You don't find this stifling at all?
Yeah, I have done. It's taken me a long time to adjust to it, I must admit.
Yeah.
Because I was, since the age of 16, I've pretty much looked after myself. I've done my own thing. I've gone to work, come home, sorted my dinners out, you know, done everything for myself. And, well, especially being pregnant was horrible, because you lose a sense of your own personal, you know, ways anyway, because you become unable to tie your shoes, for example, or, you know, do certain things for yourself because of the size and the uncomfortableness of it. But on top of that, I had, because I'm a vegetarian, so also being a vegetarian in Colombia is kind of strange for the family.
Yep.
And so constantly I was being fed every 5 minutes, I was being given vitamins, I was being given supplements, and just, they were just so genuinely concerned from myself and for the baby as well, that I was stifled. And it's taken, well, almost up until now, for me just to lay back and say, you know what, that's how they do it here, I'm just going to go with it, because I can't fight a system that's been working.
Yeah, this is very true.
And the kids here, they are mollycoddled, they're spoiled rotten, and I don't want that for my son. But then I look at the older children, the ones who are like 10 or 11, that in the UK would be causing havoc. But here they're not. They're so respectful. They know exactly what they have to do. Everything's yes, sir, no, sir. You know, they have such good morals that I kind of think, well, you know what? Okay, so these family members, the older generation, they've raised so many children, they've all turned out perfect. I just need to relax a little bit, you know?
These are really interesting, because I find myself, and we don't even have children, but I find myself stifled on a great deal of levels. Yeah. I don't even live with a family, though, and I live in a different city from the family. I was sure to put a few hundred miles between us. But because like you, I was independent very young, and I was, I'm used to doing my own thing, and to then have everyone breathing down my neck was, it's just tough. But then, of course, they're looking after, in my case, they're looking after their daughter. They want to make sure everything's okay. And if I'm doing well and I'm fine, then everything's okay with her, really.
Definitely.
That's how they see it.
I think it's just up in having to understand, and from their point of view as well, they have to understand my cultures and my traditions and things that I've grown up with. Because actually, it was only the other month and I had to send an email to most of the family members here in this family because I had a breakdown. They all came here for the day. They were staying for lunch. I had them in every room. Like the thing is here, they don't appreciate space. They don't understand that sometimes I just want my own room to be my room. I don't want 100 people in here looking through my things, talking to me, laying on my bed, and I was in a bad mood anyway, normal. And I just wanted somewhere to go where I could be by myself, maybe call one of my own members of family or my sister or somebody and just have a normal conversation. And I didn't have anywhere to go. The whole house was filled with people, and they were laying on my bed, and I just thought, and I can't go outside because it was dark, and so it left me with no choice. And I ended up, it became so obvious that I was upset that I actually made them feel so uncomfortable they left. And my husband was mortified, and I ended up sending an email the next day just to explain to them that, you know what, sometimes I just have moments where I miss my family, and by having all of you around, it makes it worse, because having you around all the time makes me understand that mine aren't here. And they understood, and they were so nice about it, but it was embarrassing. And it's just getting things like that, out in the open and making everyone aware that there is such a clash of cultures here that you have to be kind of clear about how you're feeling. You can't hide your emotions here with a Colombian family. You have to be very direct. It's okay now, thank God. We have our moments, and it is hard.
I can completely empathize with you on this one. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. I genuinely just go off for a walk, but obviously you couldn't. But I mean, you've been really open with us here, Claire, and I am really revealing about the whole processes and your what you love about being here, which is clearly outweighs everything else. I mean, you can tell you're happy here. I think your blog is mistitled. I don't think it should be An Idiot Abroad, because I think you've really taken it all on.
Yeah, maybe I need to change that now. Maybe a mother abroad.
A mother abroad, a British mother abroad, something like that. But Claire, I'd like to take this moment just to thank you and congratulate you. Thank you for coming on Columbia Calling and sharing these deeply personal experiences with us.
You're more than welcome. It's been lovely.
Okay, well, thank you. And I hope this has been helpful for those of you out there thinking of raising a family overseas or in a sort of Anglo-Colombian situation or something similar. Most of this is the same for Latin America. And we've been talking to Claire Austin. You can find her blog by Googling An Idiot Abroad. Or you can find it on my website where it will be linked. That's at richardmccall.com on the Columbia Calling page. I'm Richard McCall, and this has been Columbia Calling. I hope you enjoyed the show.
Live call-in shows and hosts from your favorite countries. This is the Overseas Radio Network.